Here we are on Chaf Amud Aleph. We're up to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Matza igros shum v'igros mazon, shtare chalitza umeunin, v'shtare berurin, v'chol ma'is abezdin, hareza yachzir. The Mishnah rattles off several types of shtaros that a person could find. For example, what's called an igros shum, which is a letter of evaluation or assessment that essentially assesses the value of the loves property in the event that he doesn't have money to repay the debt. They have to go to his property, so there's a document that states his property is worth X amount. Then you have what's called igros mazon. Igros mazon is, let's say, for example, Reuven agrees to support Shimon or support anyone, whatever it is, and they draw up a contract that says, I'm going to, you know, provide you with X amount over a certain period. That's called igros mazon. Then, of course, you have shtaros of chalitza and miyot. So chalitza we've already discussed extensively in Yavamos, where the Yavam decides he doesn't want to go through with Yibam, he wants to do chalitza, so you have to write up a shtar for that. And the same for miyot, right? Miyot we know is if a girl who's under the age of 12 is married off by her older brother or by her mother, that marriage is only binding midurabanan. She can walk out of the marriage once, you know, in other words, before she turns bas mitzvah. So you also have to write up a shtar for miyot. Then you have what's called shtare berur. The Gemara is going to explain what that means. And then the Mishnah just says, generally, any maisa bezdin, which again, the Gemara is going to explain, that basically just means that any shtar that's ratified or certified in bezdin, in all of these scenarios, you have to return the shtar to the subject of the shtar. Then the Mishnah continues, matza bachafisa obedeluskema. If you found a shtar or multiple shtaros in various types of containers, again, the Gemara is going to explain what all these terminologies mean. Tachrich shal shtaros o aguda shal shtaros hareza yachzer. Or if you find a roll or a bundle of shtaros, you also have to return those. V'chama aguda shal shtaros shlosha kshurin zebaze. How do you define a bundle of shtaros? Means you have at least three shtaros that are tied up together. Then you have to return it to the person who comes and claims it. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer echad halove mishlosha yachzer lalove shlosha halovin min haechad yachzer lamalve. So imagine the following. Let's say you find three shtaros on the ground, and each of the shtaros say, for example, that, let's say, shtar A says, Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, then the second shtar says he borrowed money from Levi, and the third shtar says Reuven borrowed money from Yehuda. So, in other words, Reuven is the love in all three shtaros, but there are three different malvas, or you have the opposite. Let's say Reuven lent money to three different people, and you find all three of these shtaros. So, in both of these cases, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, you return the shtar to either Reuven the love or Reuven the malva, depending on the case, meaning the person that is the subject, that is the common denominator amongst all three shtaros. And again, the Gemara is going to explain why that is. And then the Mishnah says, "Matzah shtar bein shtarosav ve'eno yodea mativo yehi munachat sheyavo Eliyahu." Let's say you found the shtar amongst your filing cabinet of shtaros, but you don't know what the story with the shtar is. It's not your own personal shtar. Let's say someone entrusted you to watch one of their own shtaros, and you don't remember. You don't know what the story is. You don't know, is this a debt that was already repaid? You don't know what's going on with the shtar. So basically, you can't give it back to either party because you don't know if the debt had been repaid. So you have to leave it until Eliyahu Hanavi comes, which is just another way of saying you basically can't do anything with it unless you have some external evidence that the debt was paid. And then finally, the Mishnah says, "Im yeshi mahen simponos, yase mashe basimponos." We're going to talk a lot about this on the next Amud. But basically, the Mishnah says, if you have what's called a simpon, basically is a document of cancellation. In other words, it's essentially a glorified receipt. It says that the love already paid up his debt, so then you're going to follow whatever it says in that debt of cancellation. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to explain each of these lines in the Mishnah. My shtare beirurin. So that was one of the examples we gave at the beginning of your person finds a shtar beirurin. So what exactly is that? So there gives two possible explanations. Hacha tirgamu shtare tanasa. So in Bavel, they said that a shtar beirurin refers to what's called shtare tanasa, which basically just means a shtar that lays out the various claims of the litigant. So in other words, if Reuven is claiming that Shimon owes him $1,000 and Shimon is denying it, so it's just a shtar that essentially lays out all the information of the two litigants. Then Rabbi Yirmiyah amar, zeborer lo echad v'zeborer lo echad. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, no, that shtar beirurin is an allusion to a Mishnah that appears at the beginning of the third parak of Sanhedrin, which states the following. Let's say, for example, you have two guys who are coming to court. Reuven and Shimon are fighting it out about whatever. Reuven says Shimon owes him $1,000. Shimon denies it. So they each come to court. The question is, how are you going to find judges to litigate this case? So the Mishnah in Sanhedrin tells us that each of the litigants, they basically get to pick one judge, and those two judges then pick a third judge. So that third judge is going to be the deciding vote, essentially. So these two litigants, they have to sign a shtar that says, yes, I'm picking whoever, Levi and Yehuda, to be, in other words, I'm going to pick Levi to be my dayan, and then Shimon says, I'm going to pick Yehuda to be my dayan, and then the two of them together are going to pick Yisachar to be the third dayan. Okay, then the Mishnah said, V'chol ma'isa bezdin harei zeyachzer. We said, any shtar that's ratified in bezdin, you also return. So the Gemara is the following story. Hahu gita te ishtakach beidina deravuna to have a ksiv be b'shevire masa da arachis nahara. There was a get that was found in Ravuna's bezdin, and it said on the get that the get was written in a city called Shevire that was located on the Rachis River. We know that this is like the ABCs of writing a get. We spoke about this extensively in Maseches Gittin, that when you're writing a get, you also have to write the name of the city as well as the river on which the city is situated. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna, Chayshina l'shnei Shevire. We have to be concerned that there are multiple cities named Shevire that are located on this river, and therefore you can't return the get to the person you think is the subject of the get, because there's an off chance that there's another guy with the same name in the other city called Shevire that also potentially wrote a get to his wife with the same name. So Amar le Rav Chista le Rabba, Poke Ayin de la Orta Bayla Rav Huna Minach. So Rav Chista turns to Rabba and says, I want you to go and investigate what the source for this halacha is, because in the evening Rav Huna is going to ask you about it. So Nafak Dach Yashkach, Disnan Kol Maisa Bezdin Hareza Yachzir. So he found our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that whenever you have a shtar that's ratified in Bezdin, you return the shtar. So the question is, why on earth are we going to be concerned that maybe there's another city with the same name and there's another guy with the same name in that city? It sounds like such a crazy probability. And the Mishnah told us that once you have a shtar ratified in Bezdin, you can return it. So the Gemara says, Amr le Rav Amram le Rabba, Hechi Pashin Mari, Surah Mimamona. So Rav Amram turns back to Rabba and says, hang on a second. How can you bring me a raya from our Mishnah that says, well, you return the shtar, you're trying to extrapolate Isser from Mamon. In other words, you're trying to talk to me about returning a get, which involves the realm of Isser the Heter, but the scenarios in our Mishnah, we're talking about things like Shtare Beirut and other Shtaros that involve the Mamon, to which Rabba responds, it's not true. Amar le Tarda, Shtare Chalitzu Meyunin tonight. He says, you fool. Look back at the Mishnah. Two of the examples we mentioned in the Mishnah were Shtaros that involved Chalitza and Meyun, both of which are Isser the Heter. So you see that it doesn't make a difference whether we're in the realm of Dine Mamonos or Isser the Heter. Once a Shtar is ratified in Bezdin, you can return it, and you have to start being concerned that maybe there's another guy with the same name in another city with the same name. In other words, once it's ratified in Bezdin, you can give it back. The Gemara just concludes the story. It says, "Paka arza deveirav mar amar mishum lasai didi paka umar amar mishum lasai didi paka." The Gemara relates that the walls of the base measure, so the pillars of the base measure, started to cave in. They started to dislodge, and that each of these Amorim, Rav Amram and Rabba, said the reason why the base measure is caving in is because you offended me. It's because of my fortune that you offended me. That's why the walls of the base measures are starting to collapse. Okay. Then we said, Matza b'chafisa obidaluskema, my chafisa. So we mentioned a person found, a bunch of shtaros in various kinds of containers. You have to return it. So what's a chafisa? Amar Rabba bar Barchana, chemes ktana, it's a small flask, a small earthenware flask. My deluskema, Amar Rabba bar Shmuel, talika desave. It's like a container that was used by the elderly. Then the Mishnah says, tachrich shel shtaros o aguda shel shtaros. Tan Rabbanan, kama hu tachrich shel shtaros, shlosha kruchen zeb. So a tachrich of shtaros, a roll of shtaros, is when I have three shtaros rolled together, and an aguda shel shtaros, a bundle, is when I have three of them tied together. So asks the Gemara, Shamat Nina Kesher Simon, are we to infer from this Gemara that the knot that binds together the various shtaros itself constitutes a valid simon? Hatani Rabbi Chia, shlosha kruchin zebazeh. But that doesn't seem to be borne out by Rabbi Chia's statement. Rabbi Chia says that in other words, that the only identifying feature that we have are the number of shtaros, not the way in which the shtaros are knotted together. The Gemara a little bit later on, the next parak, discusses this question about whether a kesher, whether a knot that ties items together constitutes a valid simon for the purposes of a shavas aveda. So the Gemara says that the way Rabbi Chia formulates this halacha, it doesn't seem to bear that out. It seems like just if Reuven comes and says, yeah, I lost three shtaros, he doesn't have to start, telling you, well, there's a knot over here, there's a knot over there. As long as he identifies the correct number, that seems to be sufficient. So the Gemara pushes back on that. The Gemara says, "Ihaki hainu tachrich." But then, if that's the case, if an aguda shel shtaros has nothing to do with the knot, it's just the number of shtaros, and Reuven says, "Yeah, I lost three shtaros." How exactly does that differ from the first case in the Mishnah of a tachrich shel shtaros? So there was the Mishnah presented two cases: there was a roll of shtaros and there was a bundle of shtaros. So we thought that the difference was that the roll is just the number of shtaros, and the bundle is the fact that it's knotted together, which is like an additional level of a simon. But now the Gemara says, "No, the simon is not the knot; the simon is just the number." But then, how is it different than the first case? So the Gemara says, no, there's still a qualitative difference between the two cases. Tachrich kol chad v'chad b'rosha d'chavre aguda d'ramu ahadadi. So again, basically, a tachrich is when the shtaros are lined up top to bottom. So in other words, the top of the second shtar touches the bottom of the first one, as opposed to into an aguda where all the shtaros are basically just stacked on top of each other. So again, even if you deny the fact that there's a knot that's tying everything together, there's still going to be a difference between the two. Okay, then the Gemara says, ukruchos maim. I'm sorry, the Gemara says, ukruchos maim machris, minyan. So the Gemara says, what in a case where the shtaros are tied together, so the question is, what exactly are you going to announce? You're going to announce the number of shtaros that you found. Let's say a person announces, I found three shtaros. And then Reuven says, oh yeah, I lost three shtaros. So the Gemara says, my iria tlasa, afilu treinami. If that's the case, if we're talking about a scenario where all you're announcing are the number of shtaros that you lost, so the Mishnah seems to be essentially overselling what the scenario is. Why does the Mishnah have to say that you lost three shtaros? The Mishnah could have just as easily presented a case where the guy said, I found two shtaros. Why does it have to specify three? So the Gemara says, Ela kid amar Ravina tiva machris, hachanami shtare machris. The Gemara alludes to a statement of Ravina that appears in the next parak, where he's discussing a person who finds lost coins. So he says that a person just announces tiva machris, that I found coins. He doesn't say how many he found. Now, implicit in the word coins, because it's plural, is minimally two. So saying that you found two coins would not be a sufficient identifier, because that's already built into his statement. Saying three, that's already a chiddush, because there the assumption is you have to know exactly how many you lost. So the same thing is true when it comes to the word shtari. Shtari means documents in the plural. So the assumption is that two is the bare minimum. So that's already built in to what the person said. When you say I lost three shtaros, that's already a little bit of a chiddush. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer echad halove mishlosha yachzer lalove. So we gave this scenario before where we said, let's say for example, Reuven borrowed money from three different people, from Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, and now you find three shtaros on the ground that say that Reuven owes money to each of these individuals. So we say that you return all three shtaros back to Reuven. You don't assume that the shtaros were in the possession of each individual malveh, and they all happened to lose it all next to each other. No, it was all in Reuven's hand, and he must have dropped all three of them. Again, because, in other words, if it were true that the malvehs, that Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda had possession of these shtaros, the odds that the three of them were in the same place at the same time and drop the three shtaros together is highly improbable. So the Gemara says, but hang on a second, maybe not. Dilma l'kayu minu hazli. Maybe the three of them were going together to ratify the shtaros. It's not so crazy. Reuven maybe borrowed money from all three at the same time, and they all went at the same time to go to Bezdin to get their shtar ratified. So the Gemara says, nope. The case is that the shtaros are already certified, so there's nothing for them to do anymore. So the Gemara says, okay, Dilma miyada desafer nafil. Maybe these shtaros fell from the hands of a sofer. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Lo mashe inish kiyume biyada desafer. People don't leave ratified shtaros in the possession of a sofer. So again, the fact is, when you find these three shtaros that say that Reuven borrowed money from three different people, the assumption is not this far-fetched case that each of the three malvez or the sofer or someone else dropped the shtaros. No, obviously the assumption is that Reuven the lovez must have dropped all three of them, and then we return them back to Reuven, the assumption being that he already paid up his debt. Then the Mishnah presented the converse of this. Shlosha shalavu me'echad yachzer la'malve. Let's say Reuven was the malve in this case. He lent money to three different people, and he dropped the shtaros. So again, you return them all to Reuven on the assumption that Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda have not yet paid up the debt, and you don't, in other words, that you don't return it to each of the individuals. The same argument as before. If they really belong to the three loves, again, the odds that all three of them dropped it at the same place is highly improbable. And again, the Gemara says, Dilma lemichtevinu azle. Maybe the three loves went to go get their shtaros written at the same time. And again, the Gemara says, no, dechsive beslas yade safre. The three shtaros were written with three different handwritings. They went to three different sofrim. So there's no way that these three shtaros were dropped by, in other words, were dropped by the three different loves, because they all happened to go to the sofrim at the same time, because they all went to different sofrim. So then the Gemara says, vidilma lekayu minu azle. Maybe the three loves went to go ratify the shtaros, to which the Gemara says, no, malve mekayim shtare, love lo mekayim shtare. Loves don't certify shtaros. Loves don't want the shtar to be certified. If a shtar gets certified, that means the love has to pay up a debt. So it's only the malve who's the one who's going to go and certify the shtar. Okay, then we said, in yeshi mahen simponos, yase mashe basimponos. We mentioned at the end of the Mishnah that if you have this debt of cancellation, which again is basically a fancy way of saying that the love paid up his debt, you follow whatever it says in the simpon. Amar of Yirmiya barava amara. Simpon hayotze mitachas yedei malve, afal pisha kasu b'chsav yado, eno ela kibesa Kufaso. Let's say you have this shtar, this simpon, this glorified receipt that says that Shimon paid up the debt that he borrowed from Reuven. But the problem is the shtar is emerging from Reuven's possession, Reuven the Malve. There's a shtar, and the shtar is even written in Reuven's own handwriting. It says, Shimon hereby paid up the debt, you know, paid up the money that I lent him. We assume that that's what the Gemara calls a misachik, that Reuven the Malve, he's just fooling around, he's having a laugh, but the shtar is puzzle. The shtar is really invalid, and Shimon still owes money to Reuven. The Gemara clarifies. Lo mi boya kasu b'chsav yad sofer di'iko l'meimar safra isrami le'v'chasav ela afilu kasu b'chsav yado pasul savar dama misrami v'ase ben ashmashos v'kapara li di'i lo yahiv nalei lo yahiv li zuzei echtov ana d'chi aisi li zuzei etein lei. The Gemara says it's certainly the case that such a shtar, such a simpon that's emerging from the possession of the malveh is pasul if he hired a sofer to write it, because the assumption is, let's say the malveh lives in a small town and they don't have sofrim come by very often. The sofer comes by once a year to check everyone's tefillin during Aseres Me'etshuva, let's say. So that was the one time a year the sofer comes by. So he says, listen, I know that that the loveh is eventually going to pay up the debt to me, so I want to preempt him by writing the simpon, by writing this receipt already now, so that this way when he pays me, I can hand him the simpon back. So that's a legitimate argument, because the sofer is not going to come around for another year, so he doesn't want to wait a year to give the simpon to the loveh. So he says, okay, I'm going to hire the sofer. So now, when Reuven drops that simpon, we don't say, oh, that must have been Shimon's, he must have paid his debt up. He says, no, I went to the sofer already because I knew he wasn't going to come back and, you know, back to town, you know, until next year. But the Gemara says, not only that, even if the simpon is written in the Malveh's own handwriting, you can still make this argument. Why? Because the Malveh can say, listen, I thought or I knew that the Lovet would try to come pay me back at the most inconvenient time, 5 minutes before Shabbos started. He's going to come knock on my door right before Shkia on Friday, and I knew that he wouldn't pay me the money unless I had this simpon, unless I had this this debt of cancellation to provide him. So I preemptively wrote it so I could just hand it to him the second he gave me the money. And therefore, when you find the simpon dropped on the street, you can assume that it actually belongs to Reuven the Malveh, because and Shimon has not, in fact, paid up his debt yet. Okay, then the Gemara says, Tanan, im yeshi mahen simponos, yase mashe ba simponos. The Mishnah told us that if you find the simpon, you find this debt of cancellation amongst your shtaros, you have to follow what it says in the shtar, which implies that amongst the shtaros of the Malveh, he can have such a shtar. So the Gemara says, no. Kida amara safra sheninza ben shtaros keruin, hachanami shemitza'o ben shtaros keruin. The only time we say that you can rely on what it says in a simpon that's emerging from the possession of the Malveh, which is not really where the simpon is supposed to be. It's supposed to be the lowest possession once he pays up the debt. That's only when you find it amongst other torn up shtaros. If you place a simpon amongst torn up shtaros, that's an indication that the simpon is actually valid, almost counterintuitively, because usually, a lovet, once he receives this the simpon, in other words, he's going to go ahead and tear up the shtar. He doesn't want to have the malveh try and collect from him again. So then the Gemara says, Tashma nimtza le'echad ben shtaros of shtaros shel Yosef ben Shimon perua shtaros shnehem peruin. So this is a mission that appears at the very end of the Maseches Bava Basra. So imagine the following: Reuven is the malveh. He lent money to two guys named Yosef ben Shimon, and he has one simpon that says that Yosef ben Shimon paid up his debt, but it's unclear which Yosef and Shimon paid up the debt. So the Mishnah in Bava Basra says that basically Reuven can't collect from either of them, because there's no way to know which one paid up the debt. And again, you see from the Mishnah in Bava Basra that the Malveh can have a simpon in his possession. To which the Gemara again says, no. Kita Amar Rav Safra Shenimtza Ben Shtaros Keruin, Hachanami Shenimtza Ben Shtaros Keruin. The same answer we just gave a second ago. You found the shtar amongst other torn up shtaros. That's how you know that the simpon is valid. But anything short of that, the simpon would be invalid. The Gemara quotes a Mishnah at the end of Masechta Shavuos. Tashma, Shavua Shelo Pakadnu Abba, Vishalo Amar Lanu Abba, Vishalo Matsanu Bein Shtarosav Shel Abba, Sheshtar Zeparua. The Mishnah in Shavuos describes the following case. Let's say Reuven lent money to Shimon, and then before Shimon had a chance to pay up the debt, Reuven died. So now Reuven's Yisomim come knocking on Shimon's door and say, we want you to pay up our late father's debt. So basically the Mishnah says that Bezdin is going to force the Yisomim to take a Shavua in some variation that our father never instructed us that you paid up the debt, we never saw in any of his shtaros that you paid up the debt. He never told us that he paid up the debt. So one of the variations that Bezdin says, or that they have to swear, is that we never saw amongst our father's shtaros that you repaid the debt. So the question is, what do you mean? Why would they see that amongst the father's shtaros? It sounds like that the father might have had a simpon theory, might have had this debt of cancellation that would have indicated that in fact Shimon paid up the debt. So again, the Gemara says, no, I'm a Rav Safra, Shenimtza Ben Shtaros Keruin. The same answer. This was the original source of Rav Safra's answer. The case was that the simpon was found amongst torn up documents, and that's the only reason why it was kosher. And the Gemara says, tashma, simpon sheyesha lavedim, yiskaya bechosma. So the Braisa tells us that if you have a simpon where there are edim signed off on the bottom, so that simpon is certified, is ratified by the signatories, by the guys who are signing off on the bottom. So again, that implies that the simpon is in the possession of the malveh. And again, the Gemara rejects that. The Gemara says, "Ima yiskayim mechosma v'shaylina luhulisade iparua ilo parua." The Gemara says, "No, that you certify the simpon by, but in other words, not by looking at the signatures, but by actually going to the edim who are signed off on the bottom. So if let's say Levi and Yehuda are the edim signed off on the bottom of the simpon, you have to track down Levi and Yehuda and ask them to their face, point blank, did Shimon pay up the debt?" In other words, you cannot rely on the simpon. You can't rely on the fact that there are edim signed up on the bottom that say that Shimon paid up the debt. You have to go ask them point blank whether Shimon actually paid up the debt to Reuven.